Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest in this episode, but an excellent one. It is Keith O'Brien, whose new book is Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose in the Last Glory Days of Baseball. And in this podcast, we talk about Keith's book. It is a deep examination of Pete Rose and everything that comes with Pete Rose. And Pete Rose remains endlessly fascinating to many people. And obviously, there's some currency here with Shohei Ohtani. So Keith O'Brien, author of a new book on Pete Rose, coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, Keith O'Brien is the author of Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose, and The Last Glory Days of Baseball. That book is out now. Check it out wherever you get your books, either in Old School Bookstore or Amazon Goodreads. He's also the author of a best-selling book, Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation. And with that, I welcome Keith O'Brien to the Sports Media Podcast. Keith, welcome.
So good to be here. Thank you.
All right. So I want to ask you about, which, you know, again, you'll be getting this question from everybody, but Pete Rose is 82 years old. He last played Major League Baseball in 1986. Why do so many people still care about Pete Rose?
I think it's the same reason why we ever cared about him in the first place. You know, he has lived for so long that in a lot of ways we have forgotten of who he once was. And love him or hate him, defend him or denigrate him, he was an American icon. And he was an icon, not just because of the hits and the records and the accolades and the World Series titles, but because of how he played. You know, that nickname Charlie Hustle. And I think what's compelling about it is that it sort of personified America. You know, Pete was, you know, white working class. He wasn't that talented. These days, he probably never gets a shot to play in the minor leagues because the minor leagues are so much smaller today than they were in 1960. But despite all of these things, you know, he gets his chance. He makes the most of it. He becomes somebody. And, you know, Americans love to tell themselves that story, you know, that if you work hard, if you play hard, if you do your best, if you hustle, you can do anything. And, you know, that's a story that America loved. And we loved it in part because the press just fed it to us. The sports media in the 1960s and 70s really did gild the edges of the Pete Rose mythology.
Before I get into the book, I want to ask you a question that I was thinking about when I knew I would have you on. And that is, if Pete Rose had been enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame anytime, let's say, in the last 10 years that, you know, baseball and Pete Rose came to some kind of agreement. You know, they figured out whatever the procedure would be, and sort of everybody sort of has an ending here. Do you think he still would have written this book, or is part of the allure of the book that he remains sort of the face of a person who is not in the Hall of Fame, given obviously all his accolades on the field?
It's a great question. And I think you're onto something there. You know, if he had struck a deal anytime in the past 35 years, the narrative, just speaking strictly from a storytelling point of view, isn't as powerful, and probably, you know, wouldn't have been worth a book length project at this point. And this thing that you hit upon has been mentioned over the years about, you know, Pete's relevance, just even as a guy at autograph shows. You know, when he, you know, goes to shows, which is something that many aging players do, not just Pete Rose, the lines are long. People want to see him, and they're often longer than the lines for men who are maybe in the Hall of Fame. And so in a certain way, the fact that he was banished has given him an enduring relevance, not just in baseball, but in American culture.
Pete Rose spoke to you for this book, which is pretty interesting to me. He granted you interviews in September of 2021, as you write, first in by phone and then in person. And then at a certain point, as the conversations were getting into probably, you know, stuff that's either Pete doesn't want to revisit or stuff that's, you know, absolutely has to be written in a book like this, but it's not going to necessarily be flattering to Pete. He pretty much pulls out and ceases contact. So two parts on this. One, why do you think he initially decided to talk to you? And then secondly, what was your reaction when he decided basically to go dark on you?
So, you know, I'm from Cincinnati originally too. I was born on the West Side, which is the part of town where Pete lived his whole childhood. And ultimately I was raised for most of my childhood on the East Side of Cincinnati. And I do believe that it was my Cincinnati connections that opened the doors here. You know, when I began my reporting for the book, I didn't start by trying to call Pete Rose. I didn't start by trying to call Johnny Bench or Nolan Ryan. I started by doing reporting in Cincinnati, by talking to people who had known him, Pete Rose, his whole life, who were still some of his best friends. And it was through those interviews that I was given an introduction to Pete. And, you know, the first time we spoke, Pete was just ready to dive in. You know, I was told to call him at a certain time on a Friday. You know, I called him and I thought we were going to maybe have to hash out some details of how we were going to do this. And Pete asked a few questions and off we went. You know, I was very clear that, you know, I was trying to tell the whole story here. You know, as we got into some of the more difficult topics, I could sense as a journalist, as I'm sure you could, you know, his hesitance at times. And, you know, one thing that I've found over the years, I don't know about you, but if you interview famous people, they've been interviewed, you know, hundreds, thousands of times. And any of us at that point starts to revert to the same old stories, the same old details. My quest with Pete was to always push him outside the boundaries of the story he had long told. And you know, anytime my reporting opened up the door to a new room, a room that had been dark, a room that was dust filled because no one had been in there for years, I would linger in that room and ask more questions. And that was true, not just of interviews with Pete, but interviews with lots of other people. If you're opening the door to a new room, let's stay there. Let's talk about that more. You know, I think in the end, I just probably opened the door to too many rooms. We didn't have a falling out. There was no confrontation. Last time I saw him, we were in person. We had spent the entire day together at an appearance he made to christen a new casino in Cincinnati, a paid appearance. P. Rose opened the casino that day. He placed the first bet at the blackjack table that day. And the last time we ever had a meaningful conversation was in like the VIP room after that grand opening. And he told me, come on back to Vegas, stay at that same hotel you stayed at the last time. That was convenient. That worked for me. And, 10 days, a couple weeks later, I reached out to begin setting up my next visit to Las Vegas, and I never heard back.
Is Pete based in Las Vegas now, or Cincinnati, or both?
He lives in Las Vegas and has for a number of years now.
Okay. One of the things that struck me were, there's a lot of depth to this book. So you spoke to a lot of people. You mentioned Nolan Ryan before. You know, there's a lot of these former Reds or people who played in Pete's ear that you talked to, Larry Boa types, Dave Parker types. You talked to former commissioners for this, Bud Selig, Faye Vincent. You also talked to the three men who placed bets for Pete. And if you read Keith's book, or you go back when Sports Illustrated or, whoever, like reporting on this, these are all central figures in that. When you started this book, Keith, did you have a list of the people that you wanted to talk to, or was it just that one interview led to another interview, and then these were the people that you ended up ultimately using for source material?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I started with, whether it was an actually written list or just a mental list, of course there was a list. I want to get P. Rose. And then, if I can get to P. Rose, then I absolutely want to get to the guys in his inner circle. We're talking about Tommy Giosa. We're talking about Mike Bertolini. We're talking about Paul Jansen. We're talking about others. These, men to me, I knew from the outset would be critical to the narrative in the second and third acts of the story. I absolutely wanted to speak to them if they were willing. And, one thing I had going for me on my side was that, this wasn't a quick turnaround magazine piece. It wasn't something I was cranking out in a month. I began my reporting in the summer of 2021. I was still doing reporting and even changing lines in the book as recently as, December, right before this thing went to print, because the story was still moving. And at times, people didn't call me back right away. Maybe they didn't call me back for months. But I actually, heard multiple people, including, for example, Mike Bertolini, one of the men who placed Pete's bets on baseball, months and months after my initial contact with him. One day, just out of the blue, in late 2022, I believe it was. So I've now been working on the book for over a year. In my memory, to check my notes there, it was a Sunday afternoon, late in the day, and suddenly on my phone pops up a New York area code, and I answered the call, and it was Mike Bertolini, and he said he was ready to talk, and that happened on multiple occasions with many sources here.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, a couple more here with Keith. One of the things that Pete talked about in the book that was interesting, and I think there's some truth to it. The question would be if like the numbers are accurate, but he calculated that his banishment from baseball had cost him roughly $100 million since 1990 between lost earnings on the field as a manager, I would think primarily, or some, you know, working within MLB establishment and sponsorships. And his sort of thought was like, yeah, I did it, but isn't that enough of a punishment? Basically punish somebody $100 million for this violation. I wonder just from your perspective, like how do you, it's an interesting way to look at it if you're Pete Rose, obviously, and I think some will agree with him, others will not, but it was interesting nonetheless. How did you see that kind of thought, that thought process?
Well, yeah, you know, because you've read the book, that I was really careful about not taking sides in the book.
Correct.
You know, I'm not here to make an argument for Pete Rose. I'm not here to make an argument against Pete Rose. And I think you're right about that comment. His claim that this has cost him $100 million is something that people will read and say, yeah, I 100% agree with that. And other people will read and say, well, that's total crap. I disagree with that. You know, Pete's calculus on that, as he told me that day, was that if he had remained as a manager, let's just say as a manager, and stayed in some prominent capacity in Major League Baseball for the 30 years he had been banned at that point, he figured he could have made, you know, say $3 million a year or more. So in his mind, that's $100 million right there. And, you know, again, I think one reason why we gravitate to the Rose story is because it does raise all of these questions. What is enough? You know, what is the proper punishment? And to be clear, he violated a rule that everybody knew, you know, posted in every clubhouse. He must have walked past the sign in the clubhouse in Cincinnati and Philadelphia and Montreal millions of times, telling him that he could not bet on baseball. And if he did, he faced permanent banishment. And he still did it. And, you know, one of the key sort of questions that I would ask Pete was sometimes the shortest question, like, well, why? You know, why'd you do that? You knew. And about this question in particular, his answer was simply, I thought I would get away with it, which is hubris. It's arrogance. It's hubris and arrogance that are going to cost him. And in every interview I did with every former major league player, so oftentimes his cohorts, his peers, I would ask them two questions at the end. I would say, if they hadn't already answered, do you think Pete Rose, you know, has been punished enough? Essentially, do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame? And then the second question, the follow-up question, just almost as a control, was, do you think the steroid guys should be in the Hall of Fame? And it was a fascinating sort of survey. I thought at the outset of my research that most players would be with Pete and would think he should be in the Hall and should be fully forgiven and expunged for what he did. But that was actually a mix. Many players I spoke to told me flat out that everybody knew the rule, that he, you know, he himself knew the rule, whoever I was interviewing. And I remember Gene Garber in particular, Gene Garber, the longtime reliever for the Braves, who has a significant moment with Pete Rose in this narrative. Gene Garber tells me, if I had bet on baseball, I would have been banned for life and no one would even remember me. The interesting thing was, in the follow-up question, almost every former player I spoke to, these are guys who played in the 70s and 80s, were much more forgiving of the steroid guys. I interviewed Norm Charlton for this book, another reliever. Norm played for the Reds in the late 1980s when things imploded in Cincinnati. He's on the team when Rose is in trouble. And I remember Norm saying specifically to me, if you had come to me in 1987 and said, you can take these pills and you will put 10 miles on your fastball and you will be able to pitch longer and harder, I would have said, how many can I take and how often?
Last one, or last topic for me, is the story that's going on right now with Shohei Ohtani. You obviously did not time the publication of your book to be timed with a scandal involving the most famous baseball player. But as it happens, the timing for you probably now exists where you're going to be asked about gambling and baseball just because obviously of how big the Ohtani story is. And not just the Ohtani story. We're now seeing a lot of this stuff popping up across the board in sports. It's a very different story, obviously, when it comes to Pete Rose and Ohtani, and we've seen Ohtani's denials in terms of him saying he didn't bail out his interpreter. He's alleging that his interpreter stole from him. But when you saw that, and as someone who just chronicled, you know, arguably the most famous person connected to gambling in baseball history, you know, either him or Shoeless Joe Jackson. What was the initial thing that you were struck by when watching this sort of play out during the same month that your book on Pete Rose comes out?
I had one reaction just like everybody else, and that is shock that it was an allegation and a story swirling around our biggest baseball player. You know, that was stunning. You know, as recently as a couple weeks ago, Shohei Ohtani would have been considered the golden god of sports. Who would have ever imagined? But my second thought was, I predicted this. The book predicts this. You know, I did interviews with all the men, and they were men, who pursued Pete Rose as investigators in 1989. John Dowd, the special counsel for Major League Baseball, who's hired to chase him, his entire investigative team. And I also did significant interviews with Faye Vincent, who was the deputy commissioner of baseball, Bart Giamatti's right-hand man and good friend in 1989 when all of this goes down. And then, of course, Faye Vincent would succeed Giamatti, his friend, as commissioner after Giamatti's untimely death. And all of these men, in interviews that, you know, at times started in 2021, told me, well, this is coming. You know, they were looking at the landscape of gambling. They were watching it explode. They were watching Major League Baseball partner with legal gambling platforms, and they would tell me, this is going to blow up. There's gonna be a scandal. And Faye Vincent specifically, and this is one quote that is in the book, in sort of the final section of the book, Faye Vincent said, there's going to be more Pete Roses and there's going to be more corruption. And, you know, you said it, we don't know what's going on in Los Angeles. This story has morphed several times, but I think everybody would agree that we are probably very likely just at the beginning of this. And if it's anything like 1989, and Pete Rose, it's going to be weeks, maybe months before we know what really happened. And even then, after any kind of official report, there's still probably just going to be questions.
And as we close up here, Keith, how does Pete Rose spend his time today? 82 years old, I would imagine, you know, health willing, he's still doing these autograph signings and, as you mentioned, casino openings and stuff like that. But what does Pete Rose generally do on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis?
Well, you know, I don't have the intimate access to him that I once did. I see him doing the things, you know, on social media, just like anyone else could. But it seems to me that he's doing exactly what he was doing when I did have access. He appears regularly on podcasts. He often discusses gambling. He's been prone to appearing on podcasts that give gambling tips, his picks for the day. And like a lot of aging athletes, both baseball players and otherwise, Pete Rose gets paid to go to autograph shows, sit there and sign. And, it is a fascinating world, that whole landscape of autograph shows. I was fortunate enough to have access to Pete at some of those shows. Because it was at one of those events that I sort of saw the end of the book. I saw the final scene. I was right there, and I was fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, it's interesting that the business of Pete Rose, or Pete Rose being Pete Rose, continues to this day, and I think it speaks to the endless fascination with him and his story, and you captured that quite well. Keith O'Brien is the author of a new book, Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose and the Last Glory Days of Baseball. Check that out everywhere you purchase books. You'll also see Keith, I'm sure, writing some pieces in relation to what is happening with gambling now, because he can provide, certainly great insight when it comes to what he's been working on. Keith, I wish you the best of luck with this book, and thank you so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Oh, thanks. I love your podcast. It was great to be here.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Keith O'Brien for his time. Head to the archives page. There should be some stuff you like. We just went in now with Becky Lynch, who's got a better known as a... Or she is Rebecca Quinn, who is better known as Becky Lynch, I should say. And her new book, Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average, Average Girl, debuted on March 26th and is doing really, really well. Jack McCallum, the fine basketball writer, was on this podcast recently as well. Louisa Thomas of The New Yorker talked to some Iowa students about covering Caitlin Clark as a college journalist. Pablo Torre, and the guest list goes on. Again, if you like this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That is how this podcast continues. Thank you to Patrick Antonetti for your hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect forever.